listening to the Known Legacy Podcast, brought to you by Known Legacy Ministries. For more information, go to knownlegacy.org. Now here's your hosts, Bill and Travis.
Baby, it's cold outside.
You weren't a jazz singer when you were growing up, were you?
No, I was not a singer when I grew up.
Were you in a band?
I was.
Is he a singer now?
That's right.
Wow. Wow.
Oh, it did get cold in here. It got really cold in here.
I was a singer later on in my life. It wasn't until Jars of Clay came out and I started singing and I realized I can sing in this range.
That first album was so good.
It was so good. Although I love the fact
that... Was that Take Me to Your Leader?
No, that's the Newsboys.
You're right.
And that was like, and I remember the first time that I heard that song, I was like, it was the bald guy, and Rain. He was like, he would go, "Take me to Yolita," and I was like, "Who's Yolita?" I totally didn't know. I was lost. But no, Jars of Clay, man, changed it for me, and I was singing and all that kind of
Anyways,
stuff.
Anyways, so. Welcome to Known Legacy.
We're glad you're here. Thanks for staying along.
We're glad you're here. If you don't know, man, we'd love it if you could follow us, subscribe on YouTube, Rumble. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. And info@knownlegacy.org is if you want to get in touch with us, share some ideas, thoughts, questions, comments, concerns, whatever. Bill's book is still available.
Haven't taken it down yet.
Dodge
that bullet.
And so if you're interested, More Than You, you can find it on Amazon or your favorite online book retailer, I would assume.
Yeah, it's all over the place. So.
Yeah. So anyways, gentlemen, my question for you today.
Yes.
All of us are, we've had multiple jobs throughout our lives, I would wager to bet. But what was your first job? You never forget your first job. And let me qualify this. It isn't shoveling the driveway for dad. It's not, you know, going around and maybe mowing a lawn or two for neighbors, you know. Great jobs, right?
Yeah.
But it's where you had a structure, a system, you had a boss that you had to roll in, you had expectations that you knew you had to hit. What was your first job? And then if you want to, bonus, what was the first job you got fired from?
Oh, you threw that me for that was a curveball.
It is. So first job, Bill.
First job was pushing carts at Kmart.
Kmart rocked.
Kmart. And
Blue Light Special, baby.
It was. I mean, I remember I didn't know what I was doing, but I had this other guy, and he was like, "Dude, let me show you how to do this." Like, big, long, like, haired surfer dude was like, "You're not supposed to be in New York, are you?" And so he was like, "Let me show you how to do this." So, like, you gather them by fours or fives, and then you walk them in. And I'm like, "Can you clear that up for me one more time?"
So did you say thank you, Spicoli?
And I was like, exactly. That's what it felt like. I was like, what in the world? But I do remember that was my job. But I will say, I mean, I ended up quitting after like 3 or 4 months. Cause I was like, this is the worst job ever.
Right.
And I ended up working at a place called Filene's, which quite frankly, I didn't get fired from the job. But I do remember when I went in for like my like interview, she wouldn't hire me. And then I was frustrated because she hired my friend. So I went back in there and I was like, "What are you doing? I want the job." Like, I was like, I didn't even think about it. I'm like, "I'm going to take this job." And she came as like a year later, she left once. She goes, "Bill, I got to pull you aside and tell you this. I remember the day that you came back in," and she goes, "You were just so darn cute when you came in going, I need this job." And she's like, "I just had to hire you." I was like, I got away with my cuteness, I guess. And I wasn't that cute. I think it was more like the, "Oh, you're just so special, cute," kind of.
Anyways, he's determined, we'll make it happen.
Yes, determined. So.
Kyle, how about you? What was your first job?
First job was a busboy at an Italian restaurant in Grapevine, Texas.
Oh.
First job fired from McDonald's in Grapevine, Texas.
What was the basis of your fired?
Yes.
So,
I think it's hard to get fired from McDonald's, isn't it?
I was going to say.
I am so excited about the story.
I was like a star worker. I forget all the prizes where you went. They used to have competitions where you go. I was the burger guy, right? We went up there. A few of us from our church youth group went up on Sunday. I wasn't working. And a guy, I'm not going to say his name, but he was working there. That was one of our friends. And he put extra food on our tray.
Oh.
I didn't even know it. I didn't even know he did.
Guilt by association.
I didn't even eat. I didn't pay. But guilt. I was with the group. And the manager didn't like me for a long time anyway. So that was the excuse to get rid of me.
Guilt by association.
Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting. So for me, my first job was I swung for the fences. I was a house painter.
Really?
So there was a company out of Chicago, Illinois called AAA Student Painting. If you're ever thinking about hiring this company, don't.
Wow.
Because I was 15 and a guy picked me up at 7 a.m. and we would go and it was like college kids and high school kids painting houses. And
wow.
I would never hire them. Now, I did get a skill from it, so I appreciate that. Did that for 2 summers. And then I don't know if I've ever actually been fired from a job. I'm not sure.
Oh, so he threw that card out there to say, I am,
you know.
There can always be a first.
There can always be a first.
Maybe looking today. For a co-host. Exactly. Known Legacy. Info.
You fired. Oh, man.
Well, I'll take my USAID money and go home then.
Moving on. Well, speaking of jobs and things like that, I'm excited to have our guest on, Andy, who is the author of, Andy Deck, the author of Feet to My Faith. And excited to have him on today. Andy, what was your first job that you had?
Oh, my goodness. First job for me, if you tell me if this counts or not, I'm old enough to have newspapers used to be delivered by actually young boys instead of, people slinging them out the windows of cars. and so I had a paper route. And so seventh, eighth grader, something like that, 13, 12, 13, 14 years old, getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, setting your own alarm, getting up, having folding the papers, getting out there in all kinds of weather and delivering them. So that was the first job, if that one counts.
Yes, it absolutely counts.
Yes, it does.
Okay. I graduated from that to a grocery store where I sacked groceries. That lasted about a month or two before I hit the exit button myself. I did have a stint at McDonald's. I put insulation in homes. I've done a whole variety of things. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Having not gotten fired from any of them. That's why we have him on today. How'd you do it? No, we are excited to have you on today. And the reason we have you on again, Andy wrote a book, Feet to My Faith.
Yep.
And the basis is how to live out your faith in your job, in your secular job. And so I was able to read the book. I love the book. And, man, I wanted to get you on. And so, Andy, can you share a little bit about your story? I mean, just share some about you and then kind of your desire as to why you wanted to write the book.
Sure. I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, I grew up in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, and I went to church a little bit as a kid, but with the family, we went to a Methodist church there. But it was not, an active part of our life. It was just kind of a checkbox, more of a checkbox kind of a thing. My parents went through separation and divorce. I was kind of a rebellious teenager. And so I kind of wandered through high school and college, not really understanding or knowing what it meant to truly have a transformational relationship with Jesus. And so it was actually at a summer job between my junior and senior year in college is when a couple of guys at that job, an engineering tech named John and an accountant named Jim, that used to get together and have lunch once in a while. They went to the same church and they invited this little college student to come in and sit with them. And the Lord just kind of prepared my heart in such a way that I was curious, asking questions. And so in that summer of 1983, I came to understand what it meant to truly place your faith and trust and have a personal relationship with Jesus. So that happened, I guess, growing up in Oklahoma. That's kind of late in life, if you're 21 before you, you come to faith in Christ. And so the book itself, the idea of as I stepped into my working career, I was also kind of new at that. So I started my spiritual journey, if you will, and my professional journey about the same time when I was around 21 years old. And so I was fumbling my way through both of them, honestly, and I've done it very imperfectly over the years. But I certainly, being an engineer in training, I needed to understand why. And if you're going to do something and if you believe it's important, then you kind of jump in with both feet. And so I felt like if you're going to church on Sunday, the pastor is encouraging you and teaching you things about what it means, what the Bible is saying. This is what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. How do you make that work the rest of the week?
Right.
And so, you know, I've imperfectly tried to do that over the time. And really this book is just a collection of stories, some good and some bad, of me just trying to do that through, through my work, over my career.
That's fantastic. I love the fact that, God kind of captured you a little bit later in your life. I mean, as a late teen, early 20 something, because some friends were investing in you in that way, which is fantastic. What have you found as the difficult challenge of integrating faith into a secular workplace? Because I know a lot of guys that are working, they kind of look at church workers and like, you guys got it so easy because you can just do faith all the time. I work in sales. I work in this. You don't understand the trips that we have to go on. You don't understand how we have to woo our customers, blah, 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 blah. It really is this conundrum for them. And so for you, what are some of the things that you've kind of experienced there or words of wisdom you would share with that?
Well, I think that certainly conventional wisdom would say that, you know, you've got your faith and that's private and you need to kind of keep that over here compartmentalized to the side. And then you have a professional life and that's different and you have it over here to this side. And, you know, I think that's just completely upside down. You know, we're called to be, you know, we are one person, you know, either we're genuine or we're not. And so if we are genuine and authentic in our faith in Jesus, then we have to, you know, allow that light to shine, you know, regardless of where we are. And that doesn't mean, you know, I'm going into a customer's office and beating them overhead with the Bible. You know, that's
before
that's
we meet,
not
let's start praying. Let's start praying before we start meeting, you know, as my granddaddy always said.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. I love it. Keep going.
That's right. You know, it's so interesting to find out the very simple ways in which you can actually, care for somebody, that you can show interest in them, that you can love them in the way that Jesus would have loved them, and it'd be very appropriate. It's not offensive whatsoever, you know. And so I think it's that intentionality. It's setting your mind that this is something, this is who I am, and I'm going to be genuine. I'm going to do it in an appropriate way, but I'm going to be genuine, and I'm not going to hide the fact that I love Jesus and he changed my life.
I love that, and I think one of the things that's hidden in there but it's still motivating you, and I hear, and I just want to verbalize, is the idea that not only are you identifying who you are, you fully understand who they are, and they are a precious child of God, though they may not know it, though they may not have experienced that healing from Christ, that forgiveness from Christ, but they still are a precious child of God, that he is pursuing them wherever they are and whatever is going on. And so to not only know who you are, which motivates and directs you in your actions, to also fully understand who they are and what they need, I think is huge as well.
Yeah, no, I love, and as I read through it, there were a couple big key moments. But share a little bit about your story a little bit, because I know that there was a moment when you started a study or you continued the study from someone else. Can you share a little bit about that? I don't want to take all the thunder out, but I kind of want to hear some of that story of how that got started.
Yeah, one of the things that I felt was important was the idea of finding an appropriate way. There's a desire people had of understanding a little bit more about the Bible and how it might apply at work. And so I was challenged with, how do I go about, do I do this subversively? You know, do I kind of, you know, go underground church at the office somehow? And is that the way to go? I was listening to an interview on Christian radio at the time, and the speaker was talking about his own personal experience, and basically he said, you know, the appropriate way to honor, you know, your leadership that you have at your job would be to be completely open with them about that, be bold and be completely open with them. So I went into my boss at the time, and there were some details and some circumstances that made this conversation relatively difficult,
right?
Because
it
made me personal choices in his life, right?
Yeah.
But I walked in to him and I said, you know, here's what I would like to do. I would like to, you know, meet once a week and have Bible study at lunchtime. I'd like to use a conference room here in the company's offices, and I'd like to use email just to send out, you know, reminders to people about the meeting. And he said, I think that's a fabulous idea. And so, you know, lesson number one, that Satan will tend to you know, create obstacles and make them bigger in your mind than they actually are. Right. And so, and lesson number two, I mean, now, you know, if I'm representing the light, if I'm trying to be a light, you know, it makes no sense that I would actually hide that and try and do that, you know, in America, just because maybe I'm fearful of what the, and I'm not saying there aren't, you know, in some jobs and with some companies, there may be consequences to something like that. But again, I asked very appropriately. I asked for permission. He said it. He checked with HR. They said, hey, as long as you're not sending out emails to all employees, I mean, if you're just reminding people that are aware of this and have expressed an interest in being a part of this, we have no problem with that. And so, you know, we did that. We started meeting on a weekly basis and a very kind of a simple, more like a guided discussion through a passage of scripture. And it was, it was so fruitful for some of the people in there. This was, I don't want to say we were not trying to be a replacement for church, but for some of those people in there, they were not regular church attenders, but they were absolutely faithful to that Bible study. And, a quick tale on that story. I moved away from that. That was in Oklahoma. I moved to Texas for 9 years. And when I moved back, two of those ladies, I went to work for the same company again when I moved back. And two of those ladies grabbed me and they said, hey, do you remember when you used to lead a Bible study here? And I said, oh, yeah, you know, that was, you know, and we talked, shared a couple of stories. They got very serious. They said, we've decided you need to do that again. And so it wasn't a question. It was a statement. So it's like, okay, I guess I'm doing that again. You know?
I mean, I can't tell you how many times the Holy Spirit's voice sounds a lot like a woman's voice.
It's amazing how many times. A lot of times it sounds like my wife.
Yes, actually, it does. Ironically, ironically, it sounds just like my wife.
I love it. It brings up a couple of thoughts because you talked about, you know, the enemy speaking. What are some other fears or roadblocks that would stop people from taking that step of faith to go, I think God wants me to live out my faith, but I'm afraid. What are some roadblocks that you've seen, some fears that you're like, these are good to address for people who are struggling with living out their faith at their work?
It's a great question.
I think people are nervous that there may be like consequences, like they might lose their job if they were to be too bold about doing something like that. And hey, you're called to, you know, provide for your family. So that's a real concern for you to have. I think some people say, if I get labeled as that kind of a believer, right. That could have some negative effects. I'm going to be excluded from some groups. People are going to stop talking when I walk up, you know, and you have to decide, am I comfortable with truly identifying with Jesus, you know, instead of just having my holy huddle on Sunday, right? Am I comfortable with identifying him every day, you know, of the week?
Well, and I think that goes back to your earlier comment about being genuine.
Yeah.
And if you're a genuine person, they may have that initial pullback of like, well, he's one of those holy rollers. But if they know who you really are, your struggles, your successes, your failures, your forgiveness moments, they will be endeared, I think, by that. And one of the things that I've noticed with the things that you've been talking about is you've gone through this with a servant posture. You have not gone through this with an entitlement posture. And I think sometimes that's what we can unintentionally do as a church, is we come into situations and, well, we're the church, or I'm part of the church, and so I should get this discount, or I should have this right. And instead of coming in as a servant, approaching your boss saying, hey, dude, you have the ability to crush this if you want to, and, you know, so be it. And I'll figure out how to overcome this hurdle some other way. But to just go into the business place as a servant to the people that you're there, the light that you're called to shine on, the salt that you're called to flavor.
Yeah.
I think there's such powerful things. And like you said, man, Satan will put these obnoxious obstacles in your way. The Goliaths that seem so big and so like, oh, I could never overcome that. And God's like, man, just take a step of faith and see what I can do.
Yeah.
Like I parted the Red Sea.
Yeah.
Like I raised Lazarus from the dead.
Yeah.
Like I can do miraculous things. Just step into faith and see what I might be able to do. And that's what I hear in your story. And it's really encouraging.
It's that whole Philippians 2:8. It's like about him, the form of a servant.
Yes.
The thing of like, I'm just going to step in. And it makes me ask the question to you, Andy, about you got someone who's struggling. Okay. They're listening to this. They're like, man, I'm in the workplace all the time. How should they prepare themselves to make that step? Because I know there's some moments of like, God, are you really calling me to this? Or is this just a feeling, a thought, an emotion? What's some wisdom you would share about how to prepare, for someone to prepare their heart to take that step of faith?
Well, I think it's, there is a real possibility of there being consequences to it. I would say, other than some of the being labeled as this guy and certainly being, excluded from some, hey, invite all these people to go out someplace after work. I'm sure I didn't get some of those invitations that other people did.
Right. But
I would say that you have to be ready that there's going to be some kinds of consequences. And I think that's okay. I think that's actually a really healthy struggle and tension to go through.
Yeah.
I guess one piece of advice I would say is that I think Satan also wants us to feel that we're very, very alone in this. Okay.
And yeah,
I think that understanding that there are other people that are in this workplace that likely are feeling very similar to you, and trying to find those brothers and sisters in arms, if you will,
right,
that are also looking for a little support, a little camaraderie, that they're like-minded, and you don't have this I'm all alone in this feeling when you're there. And I think that was super helpful for me as I walked through this, and having other like-minded folks that we could encourage and build up and support one another.
Well, and I think one of the things that, there's two different types of people that you're mentioning. One is the guy who's willing to step into the breach and provide a space for others to feel the confidence and the boldness to follow.
Yeah.
And then there's others that may not have that breaching ability, but need to be the first ones to adopt, ones like, oh, that dude's going. And yeah, he may have a different denomination than me, but the gospel is the gospel. And so I'm going to step in and I'm going to be his first follower. I'm going to be his faithful guy that if no one else, or gal, if no one else shows up at that lunch, I'm going
to
be there every single time, because I want to support him, because he was, or she was, bold enough to step into that breach. You talked about not getting invited to some of those things. Satan is a clever little bugger. And sometimes,
that's a nice way to put it,
he will invite you to those things where it now becomes a issue of the conscience,
yeah,
or corruption. I'm thinking about some of the guys that do a lot of sales stuff. And, sales is taking guys out afterwards, going to the strip clubs, buying a lot of drinks. Not all sales.
No,
that's not in all industries.
It's a reality.
But that is a reality. And I can see where that becomes a tension. As you're growing in your faith, all of a sudden you're realizing that there may be expectations for your vocation that are actually corrupting you, yeah, rather than building you. And so what advice would you have a guy that maybe is finding himself, yeah, in that situation of like, man, I know the expectations and I know this is who I used to be. I no longer want to be that guy. How do they navigate that new season, that new step forward on that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't want to minimize that. I don't want to make it sound like it's easy. The struggle is real on something like that. I can remember specifically one instance. A couple of vendors came to the office to take me out to lunch, and we head out to their car. It's just the three of us, and they're like, they say, hey, let's go to Hooters. It's like,
yeah,
it's like, hang on. I said, that's I'm not okay with going to Hooters for lunch. So let's, pick someplace else. And so this is a scenario of me, right? As the potential customer, they're the vendor. That's easy. That's a pretty easy one for me to control, right?
Yeah.
If you're in the sales role and you have a customer and like they want you to take them to a place like that, right? I would just suggest that you need to be prepared, do the work to come up with alternates that are not in that, don't get caught in the moment unprepared.
Yeah.
Right. Know and understand, know that that's going to happen and have options, have other things. I mean, that you're going to describe. I think it's also pretty easy as you're getting to know somebody and even a sales relationship, it's pretty easy to, you know, what do people, what do they teach in sales? You know, you want to talk about people's hobbies, talk about their family, right? All those kinds of things to get to know them, to develop this relationship. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, it's going to be fairly, you should also be reflecting that and sharing what's important to you, right? And it's going to have family, it's going to have church, it's going to have ministry, though not bragging, right? You're just talking about life. I coach my kids, you know, sports team. On Wednesday night we've got this meeting at, you know, over here. We have this small group that meets at our house, or, you know, people get the message, right? They're not, you know, very few people are actually going to, as they get to know who you are going to say, I want to really see him squirm and I'm going to try and put him in this position where, you know, most people are not going to do that. Right. But there is some, I think there is some, you can help yourself out by preparing and anticipating some of those attacks that you know that are going to come and just be ready for them.
That's a good word.
I love that. And you know, sometimes, and I don't mean to be picking on the sales guys. I just think that's such a unique challenge, because part of sales is to be a chameleon too, where you're feeding off the person you're trying to connect with. But it goes back to what you said earlier, be genuine. Yeah. And for some guys, it's working through those situations to come up with alternatives that would be meaningful to the customer. But it's also, you know, being genuine with who you are and the values that you actually do have, and not hide those under a bushel, but to, you know, just let them shine and they'll do what they're supposed to do. You know, you don't have to over-champion them. You don't have to become dogmatic about it. But, you know, you can just be genuine who you are.
You know, I do believe in the doctrine of suffering. Like, if we're suffering, it's like, God's probably in it. If you're not, then I would wonder, like, okay, where is God in this? So some of this is that, but in the midst of that suffering, I also believe that we're not going to trade down with God. Like, it may get hard, but the end result, even with Job, it was like he didn't trade down at the end of the story.
Right.
And
so
even if that at the end is, well done, my good and faithful servant, I mean, you didn't trade down. You know what I'm saying? So I think there's some encouragement with that, but it makes me think about this as we talk about it. For the guy who, let's say, just like you, hey, I came to know the Lord, but let's say you get a guy who's 45 years old who's been in this, and he is, which is not old at all anymore, just to base that, okay, 50, 60 is pretty young now at this point in my journey.
I appreciate that comment. Good. Thank you very much. I want to
throw that little nugget of truth out there too. But so you have these guys who all of a sudden, boom, they come to know the Lord way later in their life. For that guy who has consistently messed up, Andy, speak into that heart of a guy that goes, I've done this journey for 20 years and it's not been good, but I want to make a change.
Right.
What would you, what encouragement or, you know, I guess I'd say boldness for them that you would encourage them to do now at this point to start to live out their faith?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, a person that comes to faith later in life, like you've described, and even myself, you know, at 20, 21 years old, I can look back over that and I have numerous regrets, right, of things that transpired before that. You know, I even have some regrets afterwards, right?
But
I think the one thing that does provide an advantage to me over someone who basically had a different story and came to faith much, much earlier, is that I do have an understanding, maybe to a little greater degree, as far as how an unredeemed mind works, an unredeemed adult mind works, right?
Yes, yes.
And I can identify with that person out there. And so if you're a person who's come to faith later in life, and maybe is really even struggling with how can God forgive me for all of what has happened in the past, understand that you having gone through that experience and now experience the grace and redemption that he offers through Christ, you are equipped uniquely in a way to be able to reach folks that are struggling right now as adults out there, that somebody who has always been in church their entire life and is, you know, they cannot relate to somebody and the struggles and the things that many, many people go through today. So in a way, it's a blessing, you know. In a way, God has even worked those things together for good.
Right.
You know, and for the benefit of those around you, if you view it the right way.
I love it. And the I would say don't let shame or guilt become an anchor. Like God has forgiven you of that. God has redeemed you from that. As far as the East is from the West, he's removed that stuff from you. And so don't allow those mistakes, those guilt, that shame to become an anchor and an excuse that Satan uses to keep you on the sideline. You can with boldness, like Peter. Now, and with Paul, I mean, Paul was the murderer of the early church, and now he's the guy that's like the deepest theologian out there. And he didn't hide it. He didn't make excuses. He goes, you guys knew me. I was the one that was doing this stuff. Like, I am nothing but dirt. I am the garbage. And so to have that and allow God to redeem that for the story, I think is huge. It's absolutely huge.
I love it. Andy, this has been good.
Very good, Andy. Thank you.
Before we jump into our last part, any final thoughts or encouragement you have? Because there's some other great stories. You need to read his book because, man, there's some stuff that happens in Oklahoma City at specific times that blew my mind when I read it. I'm like, are you serious? And so I'm not going to give it away. You got to read the book to check it out unless Andy wants to put that spoiler
in. And we'll put the book link to the book in the show notes and stuff like that. And so one more time, what's the name of the book?
Feet to My Faith.
Feet to My Faith. Find it on Amazon, I'm assuming.
Yes.
I can hear from this conversation. It is a book worth reading.
It is.
Sure.
If you are in the secular, if you're in any environment, but if you're in the secular, it is a great book to go, what do I do with this? And a lot of it's stories that kind of come alongside and go, man, I could see where this fits into my journey.
Right.
So I think it's great. But Andy, any last thoughts on that before we jump into the next section?
Yeah, I would say at the heart of the book, I'm not trying to draw attention to me. I'm certainly
No.
Hopefully you've heard me say it's, you know, I've done, some things have gone well and some things have gone really poorly, even as I've struggled through the journey here. But my hope was that with this book, if each of us come along, especially in the workplace, to what I would call conversational crossroads, where the conversation is going along and it's like, okay, I can either take it this way or I can take it this way. Right.
Yeah.
And if you've heard, if you've read a story, if you've heard about some guy who decided to take it the road less traveled, hopefully that's enough when you reach that crossroads to help give you the encouragement to say, okay, I'm going to venture down that path and see where this conversation goes and trust God in a new and different way. And so anyways, that's my hope for the book.
Yeah, I think the book, the thing that I loved about the book was it never felt condemning. It never felt like you were magnanimous, you know. It was like, it really felt like he put like you put your arm around the reader and was like, "Hey, let's do this together." So no, it was a great read. Go and pick it up. Any last thoughts?
No, man, fantastic conversation. Thank you for being a guy in the breach and for being a trailblazer for sure on the road less traveled. I appreciate that. Mentally.
It is good. I like that you said that because there are guys. God's calling us out to step out and do this. It's up to us to make that decision to go. I need to take the faith to do it, to
Absolutely.
Get out of the boat. So, which leads us into our Fast Five segment.
There it is. Andy.
Do you want to hear that again, Andy? It's really good. Try it again.
Yeah.
There it is, Fast Five. Andy, we have some questions for you. So question number one, who do you most admire and why?
Most admire. Well, this is probably the Sunday school answer would be Jesus, right? You know,
correct. But, you win.
Okay. But yeah, I would say there's a couple guys that come to mind. One guy is a guy named Mike Elkins, who he has demonstrated a willingness to put aside all of the things that many of us chase here in the world, to follow after God, even if that means going to the other side of the world, which he's done. Actually in, let's see.
So are those pictures from,
In this, let's see, I'm trying to get my finger in the right place. And that's Mike right there.
Okay, yeah.
In that picture. Okay, so anyways, he has been willing to do that, and he's been 10 years now living in Uganda and is plans to spend the rest of his life there in doing what the Lord has called him to do. Then I would say another guy that comes to mind is a guy named Vince Loftus, who is now probably in his early 80s, and he is a guy that you will not have heard of probably. He was an elder in a church here in Midland, Texas. We came to know each other. We actually bought his house when we moved back to Midland 11 years ago. And then we ended up doing Bible study together. And what I found out about Vince is that he was doing so much ministry behind the scenes. Listen to this. Here's a guy, Monday through Friday, there are 10 breakfasts and lunches. Okay. He always had 8 to 10 different individual young men that he was meeting with for either lunch or breakfast every week.
Fantastic.
And he was, and you would not, I mean, and so he's doing the work and not doing it for the attention. And so he's really a guy that I admire.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. Mike is a rock star. He really, there's, and him and his wife and their story's incredible. We need to probably have them on.
Let's do that.
But he's overseas. So that'd be fun. Be like, could you do this at 2 o'clock in the morning with us, please? So, okay. Number two, where would you like to go on vacation?
Oh goodness. Vacation. Well, actually we're planning one right now, for the panhandle of Florida, which is a pretty place. But the funnest part is that our two sons, their wives, and our five grandsons will all be along on that.
Oh, so that's awesome. That's awesome.
You know, any place where we can get the whole family together is like heaven on earth. So love that.
Love it. Number three, what are you currently reading, whether the Bible or another book?
Yes, I read the Bible. Is that the right answer?
Good. That's good, it. Good, man, good, you are good. Striking. You're a gold star today. Jesus, the Bible.
I would say, yeah, in addition to that, and I could talk, I won't go into different kinds of reading plans or things that I do on my own for my personal study, but maybe a couple of other books. I'm reading a book right now called, you know, Can I Trust the Gospels by Peter Williams, which has been a really interesting, interesting read. I've got another good friend in Dallas named Tony Bridwell. He's an author. He's his latest book that came out this summer is called The Follower Effect.
Okay.
And it's a book about leadership and really it's, I would say he talks about how flipping the script on leadership, you know, think basically saying how leaders also need to understand and be good followers. And so it's a servant leadership kind of a new take on leadership. And he writes in the style of Patrick Lencioni, where he kind of tells a story that illustrates the principles he's trying to teach. And so those are two that I've got going right now.
That's awesome.
Excellent.
That's awesome.
Excellent.
I love it. Okay, what is a goal you have for this year?
Well, I'm let's see. Well, if I make it to September, I'll turn 63, so maybe that's a goal.
Congratulations! Yes, well done.
I'm thinking about the transition from full time work world to what does that look like after that, and I got kind of an unintentional introduction to that during COVID when I found myself out of work for about a year, and without a plan, that's really not a great place to be, and so I've been in the process of trying to kind of put together, what does that look like? Does that mean maybe writing a little bit more or, what kind of ministry involvement there might be there? Just what is, how does the next chapter of my life look? The last chapter of my book that you've mentioned today, it talks about reframing retirement and that it's needs to be something more than just, going to the golf course or whatever. So yeah. I would say, preparing, that's a goal that I have this year is preparing for the next chapter in life.
Okay. No, that's a good one. And then final question, most impactful piece of advice you've ever been given.
Oh my goodness. An impactful piece of advice. I should have a really ready answer for that, but I'm not one that works off of little phrases and everything that I threw out there. I would say that whether it was a piece of advice to me or whether it was I'll use this as an example. I was working as a roustabout in my first summer between my freshman and sophomore years. They knew that I was an engineering student, right? And I was working as a roustabout with this crew of guys out in southern Oklahoma, a gas plant gathering system and everything. Anytime there was work going on that was hard to do, hard to get to. You know, this piece of this manifold needed to be replaced and you couldn't reach the bolts. And so if it involved a wrench and busting your fingers and burning your arm and all this stuff, they wanted me to be doing it. And
they
said, you just remember when you're up there being this super smart engineer that people have to work on this after, you're doing your thing.
Oh, wow.
And so I would say understanding everybody's perspective, right? And not just my own.
That's good.
Looking at things from several different perspectives and making sure that that's that should have an influence on what we do and how, and maybe more about how we do it. And so anyways, that's
good. I think that's because it is one of those things you're like, it's not so much maybe a phrase, but it's something I was given to always be conscientious of.
Servant,
so that's
baby.
Good.
Be
it's
a
good.
Servant.
Well, any final thoughts, Andy, before we finish up our podcast today?
No, I sure appreciate the opportunity to be on here with you guys. Bill, we've known each other for quite some time.
Yeah,
and,
we have.
And I appreciate being able to reconnect with you here recently. And so thanks for the opportunity and just pray that Known Legacy will continue to experience growth and blessing.
Praise the Lord.
Man, I'll take those prayers for sure.
We certainly will. It is like it's like we are growing. We're just like a fine wine. If you see, Andy, we're just getting better with age all the time.
Yeah.
So,
although
my wine skins are bursting at this point, so I need to focus on not being so. Andy, thank you so much for being on today. We are so grateful to have you guys.
Well done.
Thank you guys so much for listening today. I mean, if you want to support Known Legacy, you can go to knownlegacy.org and continue to support the ongoing ministry that we have going on. We got a lot more coming up this year, impacting churches and families and men and pastors.
Yep.
We have a lot more with that. So, guys, be on the lookout for that. Thank you so much, Andy. Thank you so much, Travis and Kyle. Any final thoughts,
man,
Travis?
If you Bill's one heck of a great speaker, and so if you have a men's ministry or a men's retreat and you want to get Bill out there to speak to it, I know he'd love to do that. So think about that as well. Info at Known Legacy, as always. You can make requests, comments, concerns,
thank
whatever
you so
else.
Much for all
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely, bud. You're good.
As are you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
But stay connected with us, guys. Sign up to our email list, knownlegacy.org. Yep. We'd love to stay connected. Other than that, you guys have an awesome week.
God bless.
Thanks for listening to the Known Legacy Podcast. We'd love to hear from you, so email us your questions or comments to info@knownlegacy.org.